Welcome to Radio Gorgeous Reads. This is Nikki Bannerman, and I'm here today talking about a new book with an authoress of romantic fiction, with a bit of a naughty twist, shall we say. Jodie Ellen Malpas is a British writer who went from self-publishing to the top of the bestsellers in America. It's an incredible story with a lovely lady from Northampton. Welcome back to Radio Gorgeous, Jodie.
Thank you for having me, Nikki.
Pleasure. Welcome back. Lovely to see you again. Now, Jodie, you've gone from self-publishing to selling 2 million copies of 2 trilogies in 20 different languages. And your bubble still hasn't burst, has it?
No, it's still a whirlwind. And I do wonder when I'm going to actually stop for a moment and think, wow, what's happened here? It's crazy.
It's an astonishing journey for you, isn't it? It's really, really exciting and well-deserved. It is beyond your wildest expectations.
It is. I never, ever once dared imagine that I could even write a book for a start. So when I did write This Man, I put my all into it for myself. I didn't think anyone else was going to read it. I went all out with the main character, Jesse. He's quite formidable, but loved. And I didn't think anyone could love him as much as I love him. Turns out I was wrong. And he's taken me on this crazy adventure. For that, I love him even more.
It's a fantastic adventure for you. I mean, does it feel believable now?
There are days still where you do kind of have a moment where you think, wow, this is my life now. You know, I don't get up in the morning and think, oh, I've got to go to work today. I do work, and I work probably harder than I've ever worked in my life. Yes. But it's hard to call it a job when you love doing it. And I love doing it, every element of it, from the writing to the interviews to the promotion, engaging with my readers. It's amazing.
Good for you. And you literally went in 3 weeks from self-publishing to being discovered in America, didn't
yeah,
you?
Those 3 weeks, I self-published This Man on the 20th of October. I remember the date so well because it was my sister's birthday. By the beginning of November, so it was only a couple of short weeks, I thought it must have been a mistake. Amazon was going to email me and say, I'm sorry, we've got this all wrong. You've sold 2 copies. but it was selling like 1,000 copies a day in the States. And I was scratching my head, wondering what was going on, because I didn't have a clue what I was doing. I mean, when I look back, I cringe. It wasn't edited properly. The cover was literally thrown together. I'd read every blog on Amazon KDP to figure out how I would even upload it. I didn't have a Facebook page. I didn't have any readers, no promotion. So how the hell was this happening? But people were talking online about it, and Jesse Ward became quite famous in his own right. And I soon realised that other women... thought the same as I thought and had the same fantasies that I had and liked him, loved him, obsessed about him. And yeah, the rest is history.
Definitely is not cringy at all. And literally, you've got the word there, fantasies, in terms of you're really, really helping other women with their fantasies.
Yeah, and that's, for me, it's been hugely liberating, because I was a normal girl. I was married. I kept a home. I had children. I'd worked. I did the school run. But I was a terrible daydreamer. My auntie Valerie actually said to me only a couple of years ago, I used to always look at you, Jodie, when you were a little girl and wonder what was going through that head of yours. I said, Auntie Val, trust me, what's going through my mind now wasn't going through my head when I was a little girl. But I still find I daydream to the point where I'm completely oblivious of the world happening around me, and someone can be talking to me and I won't hear them. But yeah, it was so refreshing to have it confirmed almost that I wasn't on my own. There were millions of women out there who had the same thoughts as I had.
Gosh, and 6 books in 4 years only, and the 7th one just coming out, which we're going to chat about in a minute.
Well, it's been 18 months, actually, since my last release, One Night Unveiled. So it's quite a long time for my readers to wait for something new from me. I'm really anxious about this one. I don't know whether it's... I mean, the 2 trilogies that I've written, and this is a standalone. There were inanimate objects on the other covers of my other 6 books, and there's an actual man and a woman on the cover of this one. It's written in dual POV, whereas my other books were written from the female perspective. So there's so many different things about this one, and it's a standalone. So a beginning and end all in one book.
I don't think you've got anything to be anxious about. You've got a lot of people out there who absolutely love you. You're certainly an inspiration for new writers, as you were hoping for only 100, weren't you, to like your first one. That is just incredible. Now, you've been called the Queen of Erotic Literature. That's quite a title. Move on over, E.L. James. How do you feel about that?
Being called the Queen of Erotic Fiction is ridiculous, really, isn't it, considering I'm so new to this world. I feel like a bit of a veteran sometimes, and it's really humbling when aspiring writers contact you and look up to you, and you know, it's strange but lovely that they're asking me for advice, which is almost crazy because I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And I think a lot of it was luck. And a lot of it was right timing. And people sometimes tell me off for saying that because they say, well, actually, you wrote a great book that women want to read. So when people ask me for advice, I always wonder what to tell them, because it's not like I sort of did anything, you know, purposely to get where I am.
Yes. It's a real talent then, obviously, that writing, isn't it? So you've unleashed your wild imagination in your romantic novels, as you say. I mean, do you ever get embarrassed about it, or are you quite blasé about it?
Not anymore. There was a time where I wrote it in secret, so that says something in itself. I was scared of what people might think of me. I did read a lot of erotic fiction, again, on the quiet. But since This Man and One Night, I've realised how many women actually crave romantic stories, whether there's sex in it or not. The sex to me is irrelevant. It's still a story, and women want to feel all those emotions. Now I feel so incredibly liberated, I suppose, and proud. That's the most important thing. I'm proud of what I do.
You certainly should be. And are the children, do they know now?
Yeah. I recently had a launch for The Protector. And I think that was the moment where my eldest son, my youngest is quite oblivious to it all. He's, you know, computers and Nerf guns and whatnot. But my eldest is 16, going on 17. He's very mature. He's actually becoming a man himself. He's tall. He holds his own. The launch night was the point, I think, where he stood there and thought, oh, wait there a minute. I mean, there was like 250 odd readers there and wanting photographs and wanting to talk to me. And Alfie, at that point, he said to me, oh, Mum, I can't believe this. This is crazy. Yeah.
So they're really proud too, and they should be. They certainly should be.
RadioGorgeous.com.
So the genre of books is still very on trend. I mean, you've touched on it there in terms of fantasies. And I mean, why else do you think that women of a certain age are such avid readers of this sort of genre?
I don't even think they're a certain age, you know. The spectrum is huge with regards to, I mean, I've got readers who are in their early 20s, and I've got readers who, some have contacted me in their 80s.
Really?
Yeah, it's vast, and I love that. Obviously, your main demographic when writing romantic, erotic stories is going to be women. But the span of those ages fascinates me incredibly. And I mean, the older women, maybe they delved into Mills and Boons, and this is the new generation of you know, erotic fiction. And then the younger readers, I love the fact that they will come on this journey with me, hopefully, and you know, read everything I write.
Well, you write in a very real way, don't you? So you're really, really talking to them, and you talk to them online, do you? You actually answer all their questions? Do they ask your advice and about romance or about sex?
So there's women who write to you who thank you for making them realise that they want more from, whether that be from their relationship or just life in general, how it's improved their marriage or improved their sex life, which I think is wonderful. You can get husbands email you thanking you. And I love that because I love a man who will support his woman, his wife, girlfriend's passion for reading. And obviously many of them benefit from it themselves. So, yeah. So, and, you know, they've come to sign in some husbands and shake my hand.
Really?
And, yeah, and say, well done, you should be proud of yourself. And that's lovely.
There you are, you're helping not just women, but women and men all over the world, aren't
helping
you?
Helping relationships. Yeah. And that's, I think, I'm helping. Well, me and my fellow author friends and other authors are helping, more helping than being a detriment to relationships, which has been touched on many times. But yeah, it's amazing. I love it.
So how would you say your style is different to other similar novels? I know that you've said when you finish a book, you're completely drained the intensity of the characters and feel like you've got a book hangover.
Yeah. It's to writing, I always take stock when I finish a book of, or even during the writing process, where I know the end game of the characters, I know the story, I know how it's going to finish, and I go through the writing process and I feel it all, and if I don't feel it, I don't know how I expect my readers to. But I also know the end story. So if I wrote a scene recently that had me in pieces, I was crying, thinking to myself, why am I doing this to these poor people? You know, as I just give them a happy every after and, you know, make everything plain sailing, just an average lovely love story. But I don't. I have to throw the curveballs in there, and feeling it all as you're writing it, I often wonder to myself, well, my readers don't know that, you know, what's going to happen, and then they're reading this, how will they be feeling? And I love that a lot of the messages that I get from my readers are just like, oh God, you made me feel everything. One paragraph I was blubbering like a baby, and the next paragraph I was laughing. Like, just get that line in there that's going to sort of have them cackling to themselves. And I love that you can touch on every single emotion throughout a story, and that's what I try and do.
But that's the power, isn't it? That what you're feeling, you're actually transferring to them, and that's why they love it, isn't it? You know, and you can't be trained for that.
Well, I'm not trained in writing. I've never taken any courses. And I didn't do particularly well in English. So I'm sure my English teacher's probably thinking, "What on earth?" But yeah, how did that happen? But I think it just happens naturally for me, and. Yeah, I sit down, I get a story in my head, and when a story comes to me, I become obsessed with it. I make notes, viciously writing down, scribbling all sorts of things. I panic that I'm going to forget something if I'm lying in bed. I'll think of maybe it's just a line, or maybe it's just a scene, or maybe it's a connection between A and B in the story. But I have to get up and I have to write it in my journal, because what if I wake up in the morning and I've forgotten what it is? Like, it literally takes my mind over while I'm writing it.
So journal by the bed is the big tip.
Yes, absolutely. And failing that, your phone. I email myself constantly. So in the morning when I wake up and I get ding, 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 ding on my laptop, I'm like, oh, yes. I thought of that last night.
Yeah. Oh, brilliant. Good for you. So you've got lots of readers buying your books and following you online that you've given advice to. Now, you were on Radio Gorgeous a few years ago with your first trilogy. Now all six of your novels have hit the New York and the Sunday Times bestsellers list. That's amazing, and shows how sophisticated, because that's a really sophisticated audience, isn't it?
The Sunday Times as well, yeah. That's crazy though, really, isn't it? It's the lists, I think they make me nervous. My agent always says to me, because with the New York Times especially, I went to number one with This Man Confessed, and that was probably the most shocking moment of my life. And my agent called me up after she'd broke the news to me and sort of said, I'm not quite sure where you're going to go now, Jodie. Writers write books for years and years and years and years, and I felt like a little bit of a fraud almost, because I'd come in as an unknown and I'd written a book and it just went and exploded. And I, like I said, with no training, I didn't know what I was doing. I did feel a little bit like a fraud. But if people want to read what I write, obviously I'm massively grateful for that. It's still hard to get your head around that it's a title that I can have for the rest of my life. And something I'm very proud of.
Very proud and very humble of this incredible success. So we're going to talk about your first standalone book that you said you are anxious about, The Protector, which came out last week, though. How's it going? Any news already?
It came out in the States on Tuesday and it released today in the UK. So I don't really know how it's going at the moment.
How's it going? We've got the agents here. And there's a thumbs up.
Yeah. Well, all of my readers online are going grey. They're all... The shops, some shops have been putting it on the shelf a little bit early, so they've all been frantically running around trying to get them.
Yeah. We should get the champagne out, girls.
We'll be doing that tonight.
Fantastic.
Radio Gorgeous, podcasts for women.
So you had pre-orders, I noticed, because you were saying about the point of view, obviously, that this is alternating. And the readers asked for that, didn't they, in terms of... They wanted the male point of view, and you're giving both now. I've started reading it, actually, and alternate each chapter. Yes, it's amazing how you can write like a man. How do you do that?
I don't know, actually. I find myself, when I'm in the company of a man, whether I know him or not, kind of doing that daydream thing where I'm thinking, like, how a man thinks, and I try to sort of, when a man engages with me, like his disposition and, you know, how he comes across. But with The Protector... and Jake, it happened really, really naturally. When I started writing, I'd started writing from Jake's point of view before I'd even really realised it. Just came naturally. And then, of course, flowing into Camille in the next chapter. And then I just alternated. And I found that the story flowed really well. And it was great to get both perspectives because it's one book. With the trilogies, there was a lot of time and space over the story. And the words to figure out many things about Jesse and Miller. With Jake, I knew it was going to be a standalone. I had the beginning and the end. I knew it was going to be fast-paced. And I really wanted to hear his thoughts throughout the story.
That's really coming across. Did you write him first and her second, or you literally alternated?
I literally alternated. I found that it was easy to do because obviously the first chapter opens with Jake, and it's him on his own, his thoughts, his self-abhorrence, reflecting on his past. So you get a real good sense of his character, the kind of man he is. And then the second chapter was easily Camille, because you needed to get a sense of her character as well. And of course, with one chapter from each of them in that very sort of first stage of the story, you know what's going to happen. You know that Jake's obviously going to be guarding Camille, and you're... hopefully thinking, well, how this is going to work, because I know him from this one chapter and now I know her, and this is going to be quite explosive and interesting.
Exciting. I know I couldn't read it all in literally one night, but I'm going through it. It's fantastic. So can you share something about it? It's a love story with a sexy twist. It's a strong sensual bodyguard protecting a headstrong socialite. Is that right?
Yes. So Jake is an ex-SAS sniper. He has got quite a broken past that he struggles with. He suffers with post-traumatic stress syndrome. He basically survives on Jack Daniels, sex, and work. And without work at the moment, he's on just surviving on sex and drink, women. And then, of course, he gets offered the job to... protect Camille Logan, who is a socialite deemed by the media portrayed as a bit of a spoilt brat, and that's the last thing he wants to do is shadow a brat. So he declines the job, but as he realizes that if he doesn't take this job, then he's just going to fall further into his black pit of self-abhorrence. So he takes the job. She's the lesser of two evils for him at the time, but of course the story is him discovering that she's not actually the woman the media perceive her to be. He starts finding a comfort in her that he doesn't feel he deserves. He fights his feelings whilst also trying to protect her from an unknown threat. So it's quite interesting, the dynamics of their relationship.
Yes, don't tell us the end. That's all secret. I mean, Did you have to find out about post-traumatic stress, or that's something you know people or have been personally affected by?
I researched heavily into post-traumatic stress. I've really wanted to do it justice in Jake's character. There's so many different levels of it, and obviously victims cope with it very differently. With Jake, he tried to distract himself from flashbacks, from nightmares. With the women and the drink, that's kind of his only aim. It's his only aim is just to try and forget about a horrible past. But he's not convinced that he deserves to move forward from that. He's his own worst enemy, in a sense, that he's almost happy being miserable. And that's really quite sad. It's safer for him because there is obviously a lot to his past that the reader obviously will discover as the story develops. And it's much safer for him just to keep to what he knows, and what he knows are the three main points.
So he's battling his demons and he's, yes, but he's very sexy as well and very attractive.
Well, of course. Why would I make him any other way? Yeah, he's a bit older than Camille. Got the whole salt and pepper thing going on. He's a bit grumpy. She meets him for the first time and he's quite stoic, quite professional, has a presence, strength, everything that kind of knocks her back a bit. She really doesn't want to be attracted to him. She hates what he stands for, and basically that's interfering with her life that she wants to get on with, but her father has insisted on this protection. And she tries to fight her father at every turn, but short of bumping Jake off, she ain't getting rid of him.
Darling, I only listen to Radio Gorgeous. Uh-huh.
And so you have a passion for alpha males. Oh, yeah. Is it still Ray Winston? I heard that was...
Oh, I love Ray Winston. Oh, he's the epitome of British rough, gruff man.
The actor, the tough, hard hero who's now a film director.
Absolutely adore him. Yeah.
So is there a movie in the making here?
What, for The Protector? Jake's not as mature as Ray.
No. Yeah. Ray, if you're listening.
No, I do. Actually, it's funny, a funny story that doesn't involve Ray directly, but it involves his name being mentioned. Me and some... No. God. It's always funny because people always ask me, like, how, you know, when people meet me and they get a bit flustered, I don't understand it. I really don't. I try and be normal with them. Yes. If there was one person who I would meet who I think I'd get my knickers in a twist, it'd be Ray Winston. And my friend, equally, Ruth, she loves him just as much as I do. And we were in the garden one summer's evening drinking Pimm's, and his name just came up in conversation, and Ruth threw her arms into the air and said, "Oh, Ray," and the chair broke. Like, she was that aggressive with her outburst of love for him that the chair gave, and she ended up on the floor.
Both share this.
Yeah, I do love Ray. Yeah.
She's lighting up here about Ray. Gosh, if he only knew he was the inspiration, we need to tell him. Now, I see that you've dedicated this novel to your father as your forever protector. I mean, that's really special, isn't it?
Yeah, I'm a bit of a daddy's girl. My dad's a very gruff man as well. He's like a big friendly giant. But he's soft, so soft. I think any, it doesn't matter how old you are. I mean, I'm 36 and I'm still a daddy's girl. I'm very similar to him in my persona, quite laid back. I love him to pieces. And I think any girl, woman should look to their dad first as someone they can depend on, and that was the meaning behind it.
Oh, bless you, he'll be so proud. Is he going to read this one then?
No, God love him. He did ring me yesterday and said, "So how was the release thingy?" Bless him. No, he just goes over his head. Yeah. Bless him. Yeah, I'm just me.
I bet he reads it secretly.
No, dad does crosswords.
Very rude crosswords. So do your steamy novels affect your relationships in everyday life? You've mentioned your children there, but with your parents or with any potential boyfriends or partners? Or
I wondered, obviously my marriage didn't survive, so I ended up being single for a few years which was interesting. I'd never been single since I was 15. But it was hard, actually, because I found that any man who I dated, I constantly wondered whether they were interested in me as a person or whether they were just fascinated with the mind behind, you know, what I wrote about. So, yeah, being single sucked. I have a boyfriend now who is lovely and takes it all in his stride.
Brilliant.
Yeah, which is good. That's what you need.
He'll be in the next book then.
He came to a signing with me recently and he did get a little bit of attention. His head swelled.
Oh, brilliant. Brilliant. So you touched on the fact that you haven't had any training at all for writing. So you're going to be the envy of all novice writers out there, mm-hmm. including me. So how would you suggest that they start? I mean, well, literally you just sat down and just offloaded, did you?
I made lots of notes. It was all bitty. It was all over the place. It was just scribbles here and there. It wouldn't make any sense to anyone. I mean, I've still got the journal for this man and I look back and it's all over the place. But just by looking at those words prompts things from me rather than just writing it all. And then it got to the point where I'd sat down and then pieced it all together. But I wrote for myself, and I know it sounds like a massive cliche, but I think it's so important for authenticity, for flow. I think initially any writer should be writing for themselves and not what they think people want to read, and I've tried to maintain that since this man. Initially, first and foremost, I write for me. I write what I want to read. I write the story how I want it to be. And
that's the secret.
Well, it's my secret and it's worked for me, and fortunately I've got lots of readers who clearly think the way I think because they love reading what I've written. So I think that's the most important thing.
Yes.
Yeah.
And what about characters? Do they come to you, or that comes in bits, or do you put them on stickers on the wall, or?
No, I don't have, actually, no. I've got lots of author friends who have pin boards. My pin board's just full of bookmarks and things like that. But characters build. I mean, with Jesse Ward, he was the first thing that came. He was just this really intense man, and then his story kind of built around him. With Miller, he came really vividly, and his story with it. Jake was more the story came to me before he did, but then he came quite organically with the story. So the characters, like, you make notes on the characters, obviously what they look like. You try and, it's funny because you say, like, for example, with Jesse Ward, he's got dirty blonde hair, he's got green eyes, you know, he's got stubble. And seeing, I get sent pictures from readers of their Jesse Ward. Okay. So, yeah, so, and it might be entirely different to what I've explained. So, for example, David Gandy's got black hair, but he might be someone's Jesse Ward. It's just what you're perfect. It's what women perceive as, you know, being their ideal. Yeah. And I love that you can give them that space to actually read about a character, and they have very clearly in their head who they want to represent that character, and they read the story with that entirely in mind.
So it's entirely fantasy driven, isn't it? Absolutely. It's back to their fantasy.
Yeah, you can. I mean, I give vague details about what my characters look like, but ultimately it's the reader's decision about who they want that character to look like.
Yes.
Yeah.
So thank you, Jodie. Thank you for sharing your story, your success, and your imagination with us today. And good luck with your new novel, The Protector. Visit radiogorgeous.com for the previous Jodie Ellen Malpas interview is still on our archives, and keep listening for more podcasts for women by women on Radio Gorgeous.
radiogorgeous.com